What was that noise, Sparks?
Don't know. Twerk no engine, though.
And a bear?
Unless he's a clumsy bastard.
Both of them were thinking the same thing, but neither one of them wanted to put it into words. Both of them reached out at the same time to toss wood onto the fire. Using a long stick, Jamie poked around until a small flame sprang up and touched the dry wood.
Ain't it amazing how fire gives such comfort to a man? Shit!
Damn! A dead tree falling?
You wish.
Could it be the Indians playing a joke on us?
Not damn likely.
Not another sound came out of the forest, and both men cautiously crawled out of their blankets and rolled them. Jamie put the battered pot on to boil water, then dumped in the coffee, adding cold water to settle the grounds. Sparks crawled around gathering up more wood to build two more fires.
Is all these fires a good idea, you think?
Oh, hell yeah. Woods creatures don't like fire. Besides, it comforts me.
Well, it'll be light in about an hour or so.
Not soon enough for me. You a praying man, Jamie?
Occasionally. I did a sight of it at the Alamo.
I expect you did. I just done me a little talking with the Lord.
I hope he heard you. Coffee's ready.
Pass me a cup. I ain't taking my eyes off them woods yonder. I seen something moving.
Here. Well, what'd it look like?
God damn it, you know what it looked like.
Shit!
Damn! More than one of them! I think they're getting ready to attack!
I thought you said they never bothered humans.
I've been known to be wrong from time to time. We done something to make them mad.
If I knew how, I'd apologize.
I just wish you would get light.
How far is it across this range?
I don't know. Like I said, most white men avoid this area. There has been trappers who dared try it, though.
Well, how long did it take them?
I don't know. They never come out.
The hell with this.
Jamie stood up.
What are you doing? Get back down on the ground, man. Them things can hurl a rock hundreds of feet.
You ever seen one do it?
Well, no.
Jamie stood in the dancing light of the fires and shook his rifle at the darkness that surrounded the tiny pocket of light in the wilderness.
The hell with you!
You gonna make them damn things mad, Jamie? What'd that thing just do? Swallow a bug? I know that giggle. Come on!
Both men ran toward the timber. They pulled up short when they came upon Preacher. The mountain man was sitting on a log and laughing so hard tears were running out his eyes.
Hey! Hey! Hey, put me down! Fetters, come on! Where are you taking me? Fetters! Fetters! It was just a joke!
One! Two!
Three! Three.
Oh, it's cold!
Preacher joined Sparks and Jamie. When the three men reached Oregon Territory, Preacher decided to cut south for a trading post, and Sparks opted to head north up to the Whitman Mission. Jamie pushed on west. Weeks later, he sat his horse on the bluffs overlooking the Pacific Ocean and marveled at the sight. Then he turned horse's head and rode south. Weeks later, after talking with a dozen or more trappers and fixing California creeks and water holes firmly in his mind, he decided to head on back to the valley and Kate. This time, he vowed he would stay put. It was late spring when Jamie topped the ridge that led to the valley. Everything was as he had left it, except for two new cabins. He sat his horse and watched as a tall young man rode up to meet him, Jamie Eve. Jamie quickly did a little figuring. His oldest son was near about 16 years old. As they rode down to the settlement together, Jamie Ian filled his father in on what he had missed. Andrew and Roseanne were doing well at school. Two new families had joined the community, Daniel and Marcia Noble and their kids, and Wiley and Ann Harper and their young ones. Seems the Harpers had a daughter named Alinda, all of 15. And she and Jamie Ian had fallen head over heels. Marriage was discussed between the two of them, but Kate had convinced them to wait until Jamie's return.
Now, boy, you and this girl ain't been doing no bundling, have you?
Pa, no!
Jamie just stared at him.
I tried once. She like to took my head off.
Well, she should have. Now then, before we get to the settlement, your sister was making goo-goo eyes at William and Lydia's oldest boy, Bill, when I left. What's going on there?
They sort of want to get married, too.
Hmm. Winter nights, they do get long, don't they, boy?
Paul!
The double wedding was planned for June, which would give the ladies time to sew up the wedding dresses and Jamie time to melt and mold 4 gold wedding bands for the kids. Jamie decided to ride to Bent's Fort for supplies, and for once, Jamie Ian didn't pester him to go along. That boy was so much in love, he was walking into trees. Swede, Wells, and Sam opted to go, trailing a long string of pack mules and horses, for the settlement had grown so that many more supplies were needed to sustain the group. Several trappers that Jamie knew walked over to him as soon as he swung down from the saddle inside the fort.
Yeah, they some bad ones here, Jamie. They ain't come right out and made no direct threats towards you, but several whispers has been heard, and they're up to no good.
If you've a mind to, we can run them out now.
Is Jack Biggers here?
Was. He pulled out a few days ago. But some of his brothers is among them whispering. Most of them is camped outside the fort. But there's a bad one still here, calls himself Rodman. Watch him. He's a sneaky one.
Wells found Jamie in the blanket section of the huge store. The black man was badly shaken.
What's wrong, Wells?
Papa's here, Jamie. And Robert's with him.
Jamie stood rock still for a moment as the memories came flooding back. Titus Jefferson, the ex-slave who had pushed his wife Ophelia into Horn for the white plantation owner and whose union had produced the twins Roscoe and Ann. Robert, Moses' son, who turned bad and run away with Titus and then joined up and begun plotting with Olmstead and Jackson and the others to kill Jamie.
Did he see you, Wells?
Looked right at me, but didn't recognize me. I reckon I've changed some.
Wells had filled out and matured in the years since his father had deserted family and friends. He'd grown a mustache, too.
Well, he's probably heard by now that I'm here. Let's see if he approaches me.
It would have been difficult for Titus and Robert to avoid Jamie within the walls of the fort. And within the hour, Titus and Robert hailed Jamie.
Can I have a moment of your time, Jamie McAllister?
Jamie turned and looked at the man. Titus's hair was now all salt and pepper, and Robert appeared to have matured. Neither man's eyes held the wild hatred for whites that had been there in Texas. Jamie smiled and stuck out his hand.
Sure, Titus. Good to see you. And you, Robert? Let's step over into the shade, shall we?
Both men seemed to relax, and the tension went out of them. In the coolness of shade, they sat on a bench.
We knew this day would come, and we was both dreading it.
No reason to. I hold no rancor toward either of you. You went down some wrong paths years back, that's all. Have you found the right paths out here?
Oh, yeah. We got us a place in a small valley. Really not that many miles from where you and the others have your settlement. But we were afraid to come see you for fear you would kill us.
Ain't no danger of that, Titus. All that's in the past.
We're both married, in the Indian way. I have 2 children.
I figured I was too old to start a family. But Moon Woman thought different. We got 2 children, too.
Titus, have you heard news of Roscoe and Ann? They slipped away in the dead of night sometime past.
I heard they're in St. Louis, passing for white. Turns out they both talented actors and singers. They've made quite a reputation for themselves. They go by the name LeBeau. I fear they're in for a terrible time if they're discovered.
How are my mother and father?
Happy and healthy. They'd be glad to see you.
You wouldn't object if we came for a visit?
I wouldn't object if you came to live there. Both of you. It's a big valley.
Jamie pointed to the tall and ruggedly built black man standing in front of the smithy shop.
Titus, that man yonder's your son, Wells. He and Sally are married and have a family. Your grandfather several times over.
Titus stared at Wells for a moment, and then put his face in his hands and wept. Jamie patted the man on the shoulder. He waved at Wells, and the man hesitantly began the walk over to his father.
Robert, let's you and me make ourselves scarce for a time. There are some folks I want you to meet.
McAllister, stand and deliver. You choose to harbor a murdering son of a bitch, then you pay the price.
Jamie shoved Robert away from him. He turned to one side just as the burly man in the courtyard drew a pistol from his waistband. The ball shot past Jamie's head, just missing him by a couple of inches. Jamie was already running toward the man. Before the man could jerk and cock his second pistol, Jamie had closed the distance and flattened the man with a crashing right fist. He reached down and pulled the man's pistol from him and threw it to one side. The man's knife followed the pistol 2 seconds later. Jamie jerked the man to his feet and popped him again and again with powerful lefts and rights to the jaw and face. The man fell to the hard-packed ground and lay still. His face and mouth were bloody from the savage blows. Jamie stood over the man as the crowd gathered. This was not the man who had been pointed out to him as Rodman. Jamie had never seen this man before in his life. The mood of the crowd gathering around was ugly. The violence inside the 4-foot-thick walls of Bent's fort was frowned upon.
Anybody know him?
Sure, Jamie. That's John Wilmot. He's a scalawag through and through. A killer. Somebody must have paid him to do you in, Jamie. John Wilmot only kills for money.
Somebody fetch a rope. Let's hang the bastard.
One of the Bent brothers ran outside to the crowd.
Wait! There'll be no lynching here.
Bent bulled his way through the mass of trappers and Indians and freed black men. He looked up at Jamie.
Do you want to have this man bound over for the army?
No. I want him awake and able to talk. I want to find out why he tried to kill me.
Good man. All right, gentlemen, let's break it up and see to our business.
Sam found a bucket of water and dumped it on John Wilmot.
God damn it!
Jamie reached down, jerked the man to his boots, and literally threw him across the courtyard of the fort. Wilmot hit against the side of the men's court. He slumped to the ground. Jamie strode over nonchalantly and picked up another bucket of water and tossed it on the prostrate man. John Wilmot's left arm was bent at an impossible angle and was clearly shattered in several places. Jamie squatted down and spoke in low tones to the man for several minutes, and John seemingly was eager now to answer each and every question. Jamie walked away with Sam and Swede on either side, over to where Wells and his father stood, shoulder to shoulder. Both men had been weeping, for their eyes were red-rimmed. They had made up, and that was all important. Robert stood with father and son. He, too, had been crying.
What was that all about, Jamie?
More trouble. This time I had nothing to do with it. I'll explain later. Let's get our supplies as quickly as possible and get out of here.
It'll be midday tomorrow, Jamie?
That's fine. John Wilmot is in no condition to pull anything anytime soon. But he has men coming up behind him. They're still several days out, but closing fast.
This has nothing to do with you, Jamie?
No, not directly. It seems one of our newest settlers has a rather dark past. Wiley Harper killed a constable back in Delaware.
As soon as the mules and horses were loaded, Jamie and party pulled out. That night, after pushing hard all that afternoon, Jamie explained.
I had to sort of read between the lines, so to speak. But I gather that the killing was an accident. Wiley panicked and ran. He and his family were already planning on move west and were packed and ready to go. They just came a little bit faster than they planned, that's all. Wiley was a very outspoken man back east, and angered some moneyed people with his comments. I don't know what he said to anger him, and John Wilmot didn't know either, or wouldn't tell me. No matter, our valley's well known, so we've got to be ready for the bounty hunters when they come. And they will come.
This John Wilmot, what did he hope to gain by confronting you?
I can answer that. A reputation, for one. And there's still bounties on Jamie's head, totaling thousands of dollars. Jamie's made a lot of enemies over the years.
Titus and Wells broke off from the pack train 2 days from the valley to go get their families and possessions. Back in the valley, Jamie informed the others about finding Titus and Robert and that the men and their families were coming to join him. Then he took Wiley Harper aside and told him what had happened back at the fort. Wiley was badly shaken, but he insisted upon calling for a community meeting. If they wanted him to leave, then he would. Jamie had smiled at that. He knew these people well and correctly predicted the outcome of the meeting. It was unanimous. Wiley and his family would stay. Within a few days, the people in the valley had put the incident behind them and welcomed Titus and Robert and their families. All began making preparations for the double wedding, the first in the valley. But double wedding or no, there was ground to be broken and crops to plant, for the summer's growing season was short and everybody had to work. There were calves and lambs to be born, sheep to shear, berries to be picked for jams and jellies and homemade wine. There was much to be done during the warm summer months. Titus and Robert and their families moved in, built their cabins, and immediately fit right in with the community. Moon Woman and She Who Watches, both of whom were Cheyenne, spoke very good English and were accepted without question. It was to be an outdoor wedding, and the day was warm and beautiful for the ceremony. Jamie had ordered a black suit for his oldest son, and it had arrived just in the nick of time, with Jamie's grandfather bringing it from Bent's Fort. Silver Wolf was dressed in white buckskins, all beaded and fringed. The old man looked as magnificent and fierce as an eagle. Jamie Ian's starched high white collar was chafing his neck, and the stiff new shoes hurt his feet, but he knew better than to say anything about it. Jamie Ian was near about the size of his paw, but the young man knew full well his paw would still not hesitate to haul him off behind the house and wallop the living hell out of him. Jamie Ian had not seen Linda all day, and Bill had not seen Ellen Kathleen. Something to do with tradition. The altar was adorned with fresh flowers. Little girls held baskets of petals, waiting to toss them on the path when the couples would walk. Falcon was the ring bearer, and he too was dressed in a new suit his pa had ordered for him, complete with high stockings and knee-length breeches. Falcon had set up a howl when he saw the suit, but one look from his paw was all it took to convince the four-year-old he'd better calm down and act right. Almost 3 months had passed since Jamie's confrontation with John Wilmot at Bent's Fort, and the incident had been all but forgotten by everybody except Jamie. Just before the ceremony was to begin, Jamie walked to his grandpa's side.
You armed, Grandpa?
I got two pistols under my shirt. Why?
I believe in staying ready, that's why.
There ain't been hide nor hair seen of Wilmot, Parsons, Biggers, Sanders, Winslow, or Thompson in some time, boy. But today would be a good time for him to hit here, wouldn't it?
A dandy time. How come Preacher couldn't make it?
He's doing some government work. Sparks is up in Canada, and Lobo and Audie both say they always cry at weddings, and that wouldn't seem manly, but they sent their best.
I got a bad feeling in my guts, Grandpa.
That's because your oldest is getting hitched up, boy. It's an important time for all concerned. We're gonna give him an evening surprise, ain't we?
Oh, you bet. Just as soon as their cabin lights go out this evening, we have some fun.
Here come the brides. Oh, my, ain't they pretty?
The girls were beautiful. Their dresses were sparkling white, and there were flowers in their hair. All eyes, including those of Jamie, were on the two youthful couples standing in front of Reverend Haywood. For the occasion, Jamie was dressed in a suit made for him by Kate, since no store-bought suit would fit his massive shoulders and arms, and he was wearing handmade boots a cobbler over to the Ford had done up for him. His grandfather was also wearing new boots, and that was the reason neither of them felt the vibration in the earth before they heard it. The attackers were led by John Wilmot and included some of the Biggers gang and some of the Winslow trash. They had the range in their teeth and both hands filled with pistols. Jamie and Silver Wolf drew their guns.
To arms, men!
Everybody take cover!
Jamie blew two attackers from their horses just as his grandpa did the same thing to two others. Out of the corner of his eye, Jamie saw Wiley Harper go down with a ball in the center of his forehead. Two of the attackers leaned out of the saddle and grabbed him before he could hit the earth and went galloping off, Wiley's feet dragging the ground. Silver Wolf reached up and jerked an attacker out of the saddle and snapped his neck like a dry twig. Juan Nunez grabbed up a hay fork and drove the tines all the way through a man before the galloping horse rode him down and left him unhurt but out over the street. Jamie recognized Kate's scream.
Kate!
Trying to charge his pistols, he searched wildly for her, and he found his wife kneeling over a woman all dressed in white. Jamie Ian leaped onto the back of a galloping horse and ripped the attacker's knife from its sheath. He cut the man's throat, let the body fall, then reined in the horse, jerked the rifle from the boot, and charged into the crowd of attackers, now trying to escape. Jamie Ian blew one out of the saddle and, reversing the rifle, nearly took the head off of a second man. It hit him so hard the stock shattered. Jamie walked over to where Kate was kneeling, holding Linda in her arms. The young woman's chest was covered with blood. Jamie didn't have to look twice to see that she was dead. Juan Nunez was on his feet, shaky but otherwise unhurt. And Harper had fainted.
It'll take us hours to round up our horses. The bastards drove them off.
Jamie nodded his head, his eyes on Jamie Ian. The young man was standing over his mother and his dead bride. Nearby, Ellen Kathleen was standing beside Bill, both of them pale-faced and shaken.
You two all right?
Ellen Kathleen and Bill nodded their heads.
Bill, say to your parents. Ellen Kathleen, help your ma.
But Papa, Linda, she's...
I know. Do what I told you.
Jamie looked at his oldest son. Jamie Ian ripped off the high collar and let it fall to the ground. The tie followed that. The son looked at the father, and the expression in the young man's eyes was a terrible thing to behold. The young man turned and walked into his parents' cabin. Jamie went to Kate and knelt down beside her, forcing her hands from Linda and pulling her to her feet. He held her for a moment, then she pulled away.
I'll see to Ann.
I'll make a coffin. I'll just do that right now. I'll go fetch young Jamie's horse. He'll be riding the black he favors, won't he?
Yeah.
What the hell do you mean he'll be riding the black?
Be quiet, Kate. Just be quiet. He's a McAllister. He's got the blood of mystics from the Highlands in his veins. He'll do what has to be done. And there is not you nor anyone else can do to stop him. If you do not know that now, you never will. Go on with what you're doing. Do you help get the lassie ready for the earth?
I'll go help the Swede. I'll go with you, Titus.
Jamie Ian stepped out of the cabin. He was dressed in buckskins and carried two rifles, one in each hand. He had two pistols stuck down behind his belt.
No!
Leave me be, Ma. You know I got to do it.
After we've committed Linda to the ground.
Of course, Pa.
Silver Wolf returned, leading two horses. Jamie Ian's big black and pack horse with the headless body of Wiley Harper draped over its back. A second coffin was fashioned. Jamie and Sam lifted the body of Linda and gently placed her in the narrow coffin, hands folded across her chest. Jamie Ian sat on the porch of the newly built cabin that he would never share with Linda. He was silent. The holes dug in the summer earth and the casket sealed and lowered. William Haywood conducted the short service. Jamie Ian had not moved from his place on the porch. Jamie Ian finally walked to his mother's side and kissed her on the cheek. Kate's face seemed to be set in stone. He shook hands with his dad, and then he took the scalps of the raiders he'd killed and tied them onto the black's mane. Then he swung into the saddle. The young man rode off without looking back.
Jamie, aren't you going with him?
He didn't ask me to.
He wants no help. This is something he has to do alone.
Is that right?
Kate walked to the cabin door. Silver Wolf left the settlement, dressed in his trail-worn buckskins. He planned to follow Jamie Ian from a safe distance, watching the boys back. Jamie spent part of the rest of that day helping to round up the horses and repairing the corral. Then he closed up the cabin that had been built for his son and bride. Just as he was shuttering the windows, Kate appeared at his side with a sandwich and a glass of cool milk. Together they sat down on the porch, and Jamie ate.
When do you suppose Ian will be back?
When he's tracked them all down and killed them.
He's awfully young.
Not as young as we were, Kate.
The valley will never be the same.
No, it won't.
I've written what happened in the Bible, Jamie.
It's good.
I spoke with the other women. Most of the food we had prepared for the wedding feast was saved. We'll all have an early supper on the grounds late this afternoon.
I think that's a fine idea, Kate. We must not forget that Alan, Kathleen, and Bill still have their honeymoon ahead of them.
They'll be left alone. Moon Woman and She Who Watches have gone into the hills to build a hogan for them. Titus and Robert went with them to help.
Oh, that's good.
Both of them sat on the porch of Ian's cabin, their eyes on the fresh mounds of earth in the community cemetery.
Come next late March, I would imagine that we'll be grandparents, Jamie.
If Ellen Kathleen is anything like you, we sure will be.
Kate fixed him with a look that would melt ice. Then the hotness faded as she watched a smile he could not contain play around his lips. She poked him in the ribs.
Hey!
And I suppose you had nothing to do with it?
Well, I contributed a mite, I reckon.
Oh, one more comment like that, and I'll suggest that this would be a nice night for you to sleep outside.
But it might rain.
Oh, then you'd get wet, wouldn't you?
The raid cast a pallor over the settlement for a time, but as the summer wore on, the bloody memories of that awful day began to gradually diminish, and everyone resumed their normal routine. When the first cold winds began to blow through the valley, the settlers were ready for winter. The crops were in, the hay stacked for the cattle, and the barns full. And there had been no word from or about Jamie Ian. But all that was about to change. The tall stranger had to duck his head to enter the trading post. The trappers and drifters all looked up.
Oh, shut that damn door, you fool! Was you raised in a barn?
No. But since your voice bears a striking resemblance to a jackass brand, I would suspect you were.
One of the trappers narrowed his eyes as his gaze followed the young man to a corner table.
He couldn't be. The lad is far too young. But my God, the resemblance is striking.
Some food, please, sir. And a pot of coffee.
Oh, please, sir. My, he's the polite one now. I bet he's got ruffles on his underwear.
Shut up, Fuki. The fur of your ass overloads your mouth.
Jamie Ian said nothing. He just tore off a huge hunk of bread and fell to eating the good-smelling stew that was placed before him, along with a pot of good, strong coffee.
I don't take that kind of talk from no pup. Hey, you, kid, look at me, boy.
Ian continued to concentrate on his stew. He was hungry, having run completely out of supplies almost a week before. He'd been living on rabbits, and there isn't much fat on a rabbit. A man needs fat to survive in the dead of winter.
God damn you, boy! Is you deep as well as stupid?
Fluky rose from his chair. Ian looked up, those amazingly pale blue eyes as cold as death.
Shut up.
He returned to the business of eating. Fluky sat back down hard in the leather-strapped chair, his mouth open in amazement. Nobody talked to him that way, especially some damn kid. He was momentarily speechless. Several of the trappers in the room, and also the owner of the trading post, had put together who this young man was. And to a man, they were smiling. No decent man liked Fluky anyway.
Good stew.
Thanks, young fella. I made it myself.
I'd match it up with anyone's, except my mother's cooking.
Can't no one beat mama's cooking, that's for sure.
Ain't that sweet? He misses his mama.
I miss my mama, too. A whole bunch. You want to make something out of that, Fluky?
Fluky had nothing to say to the burly trapper. He dropped his gaze and studied his cup of whiskey. Big Jim Williams was no man to play deadly games with. Big Jim stood up and carried his jug and cup with him over to Ian's table.
You mind some company, son?
Not at all, sir. Please, sit down.
Thank you kindly. You be a McAllister, right?
Yes, sir. Jamie is my father and Silver Wolf my great-grandfather.
Thought so. I've been knowing the old man for 40 years. Ain't seen him in a spell.
He's about a day behind, bird-dogging my back trail. He thinks I don't know it. So if you see him, don't let on.
You on the prod, boy?
Briefly, Ian explained what had happened that dreadful day back in the valley.
I don't blame you. But is you planning on taking on the whole damn gang all by your lonesome?
Yeah. It's just one gang, isn't it?
Fluky's a bad one, boy.
Yeah, I expect he is.
You been in many fights?
A few. My pa taught me how to fight.
Fluky ain't your pa, boy.
Thank God for small favors.
Fluky sat at his table and grew madder by the moment. Big Jim sat across from Jamie Ian and studied the young man. Real calm, Big Jim concluded, very sure of himself. Then it came to Big Jim Williams. Jamie Ian wasn't gonna mix it up with Fluky. He was gonna kill him.
I'll be right back.
Big Jim pushed away from the rough-hewn table and walked over to Fluky. He sat down and leaned into the man.
Leave the lad alone, Fluky. He's a bad one. He's on the prod, and he ain't gonna take a lot of crap from you. As a matter of fact, he ain't gonna take any crap from you or anybody else. Leave him be and let him go his own way.
That kid sass me. I'll not take lip from no kid.
You've been warned.
God damn it. All I aim to do is slap him around some, Jim.
No, you ain't gonna do nothing of the kind. When you draw back again this one, he's gonna kill you.
When hell freezes over.
Fluky stood up, walked across the room, and stopped about 10 feet from Ian, who was standing with his back to the man, buying supplies and stacking them on the counter.
Turn around and take your whooping, boy!
Ian turned his head and looked at the man.
Go to hell!
You little shitheel!
Fluky jumped at Ian. Ian sidestepped and hit the man in the face with a 50-foot length of coiled rope. The rope was new and stiff and made a terrible weapon. Ian smashed the man in the face again and again with the new rope. The power behind the blows awesome. He beat Fluky to the floor and continued smashing his head with the rope until Fluky was unconscious, lying on the boards in his own blood. Ian tossed the rope back on the counter.
Good rope. I'll take some beans and salt too, please.
The other men in the room made no move to assist Fluky.
That's Jamie McAllister's boy, Ian.
Damn, I see the family in him now.
Before leaving the valley, Jamie had given his son a small leather sack of cash money and another sack of gold dust and nuggets. Ian paid for his supplies with coins and picked up the canvas bag he had brought in and packed full. He looked once at Fluky, still unconscious on the floor. Ian lifted his eyes and met the silent gaze of every man in the room.
I didn't come in here looking for trouble. If this man follows me seeking vengeance, I'll give him a proper burial as best I can.
That boy'll do to ride the river with.
He's got a lot of old Mac in him. Except an old Mac would have cut Fluky from eyeballs to belly button. He'd have said what he didn't deal with now, he'll deal with later.
Just as the warm winds of spring began to gently bathe the land, a trapper wandered into McAllister's Valley and had a home-cooked meal at the large cabin of Jamie and Kate. He had news, but he waited till the children had finished eating and gone outside.
A no-count name of Fluky braced your boy in a trading post over in Deschutes. The lad pert near beat him to death with a length of new rope. Fluky, he got it into his mind to avenge the beating and rode out after the boy. The winter was a cold one and the ground too hard to dig. Big Jim Williams found Fluky's body about a week later. He'd been shot through the head and propped up against a tree, his hands folded across his lap, name carved in the tree. The lad come up on one of the men who killed his bride over in the Willamette Valley, shot him dead in the trading post, and took his scalp right there in front of everybody. Then about 2 weeks later, he found another one up along Roaring River, killed him and scalped him. The boy is getting a real bad reputation amongst the folks who want Eastern law to be applied out here.
Any word about my grandpa?
He's never more than a half day behind the boy. Sometimes they ride together. He's teaching the boy right good, I hear. You know your grandpa, Jamie. He ain't got no use for no law other than his'n.
Ian pushed open the door to the trading post and stepped inside. His great-grandpa was seen to the horses at the livery. Ian knew they were in Canada. He just didn't know how far into Canada they had pushed. What he did know was that four members of the gang who'd attacked the settlement were here, or close by. And he knew their names, Joe Forrest, Blake Evans, and two men called Shaw and Zack. Ian took a corner table and ordered food and a pot of coffee. Silver Wolf soon joined him.
After the shooting's over and the smoke clears, boy, we're gonna have to make fast tracks out of here. These Canucks don't hold with gunplay.
Suits me.
Ian had changed dramatically since he had left the valley nearly a year ago. He was no longer a boy. He'd filled out, his face had hardened, and he was the spitting image of his father.
In case we get separated, and it might be best if we lay down two trails, you remember where I told you we'd meet?
Yep.
All right, son. You best eat quick, for here they come, all four of the bastards. They've been to the livery and seen the horses. You gonna take scalps?
What do you think?
Thought so. Cut 'em quick and jerk 'em hard. We ain't gonna have much time.
That's why you insisted we camp just a few miles from here last night, right, Grandpa? So the horses would be rested when we make our run.
You're learning, boy. You're learning. You got a ways to go, but you're getting there fast. Maybe too fast.
You thinking about my ma, Grandpa?
Yeah, I am. You've matured fast, and you got the name of a man who is quick on the shoot.
Like you, Grandpa.
Ian looked out through the crack in the shutter. The four men had stopped in the street, talking things over. It was obvious they didn't know quite how to handle this.
I think you got more of a reputation than me, boy. But news travels a lot faster now than years back. Is them trash coming in or not?
They're talking.
The old wolf shifted his chair so he had a full view of the front door.
Here they come.
The men had their hands filled with pistols, all double-shotted.
They're gonna come in shooting in.
The barkeep, the cook, and the sole drinker in the place all hit the floor behind the rough bar. Joe Forrest was the first one in the door. Ian and Wolf waited while Joe got his eyes adjusted to the dimness of the interior of the trading post. Finally, Forrest found Ian.
You bastard. You've chased me long enough.
He lifted his pistol and Ian shot him. The man named Zack kicked in the back door. He made the corner before Silver Wolf drilled him clean right between the eyes. Blake Evans and Shaw crowded into the trading post from the front. Ian and Wolf fired as one. They reloaded and then Ian quickly scalped the man, ignoring the eyes of the other three men watching him in undisguised horror and disgust.
That ain't decent.
It wasn't decent when these men came charging into our settlement, shooting and killing, neither. And it damn sure wasn't decent when they killed Ian's new bride. Now shut your blowhole!
Ian had been gone 14 months when the news of the killings up in Canada reached Jamie and Kate. Big Jim Williams rode in from the fort and brought a stack of newspapers. Jamie and Kate read them as they sat on the front porch. A reporter from a New York City newspaper had gotten his silk and lace underwear in a wad and written a long column deploring the killings and wondering when this terrible violence would end.
Ian is wanted by Canadian authorities, and he's got bounty hunters after him. That means they'll come here.
And?
If they come here and start trouble, they'll be buried here. I'll show them no mercy.
Wesley Parsons and crew was at the fort. They're riding after Jamie. He was spotted up near Powder River Pass.
I would like to know that my oldest is all right.
I'll get my gear together.
I'll ride with you part of the way. Then I gotta angle off and meet up with some good old boys. We're fixing a winter in California.
Jamie saddled up horse, and the two men were gone in less than an hour. Jamie was carrying a long letter for Ian, written by his mother while Jamie was packing. Big Jim said his farewells and cut west at Bridger Pass, and Jamie continued on north. Except for hunting trips, Jamie had not left the valley in months. Both he and horse were ready for the trail. When he could, he stayed in Indian villages, only entering after he had killed game to share with them. A hunting party of Indians told Jamie where his son was camped, and Jamie located it quickly.
Hello, the camp!
His grandpa was nowhere to be seen, but Jamie recognized the tall young man who stepped out from brush and rocks. Jamie walked horse down to him and sat his saddle for a moment, staring at the young man.
You've changed, son.
That's what the wolf tells me.
Where is Grandpa?
Gone for supplies. Light and set, Pa.
Thank you.
Ian shoved the coffee pot back on the fire and found two cups and shook them out.
You hungry, Pa?
I could eat. I've got a side of bacon in the left-hand pack and some of your Ma's put-ups in jars on the other side. They're for you and Grandpa.
Ma send you?
In a manner of speaking.
The animals put up and cared for, and the bacon frying in the pan, Jamie handed Ian the letter from his mother.
I'll just step over here and fetch some wood while you read what your ma wrote.
Jamie returned after a few moments and put a few sticks on the fire, then poured himself coffee. He studied his son while Ian was totally engrossed in the letter, reading it for the second time. Jamie noticed that the young man's eyes were a bit red. Ian carefully folded the letter and tucked it safely away. He wiped his nose on the sleeve of his shirt, a shirt that his ma had made for him.
Guess I caught a bit of a cold.
Yeah, it's easy to do that up here. Gonna be a hard winter too, I reckon.
I ain't going back till my mission is done, Pa.
I didn't ride up here to talk about that. I come up here so as I could tell your ma how you was looking and how you was doing, so she wouldn't take a notion to put a bundling board between us.
Ma keeping flowers on Linda's grave?
Everybody does, boy. She's never gonna be forgotten.
I still dream about her, Pa.
I expect you will for a long time, son. But there'll be someone else come along in the years ahead. You've got your whole life ahead of you.
That's what the wolf tells me.
Here he's coming yonder.
Both of them got up to greet Silver Wolf and help him unload the pack horse. Then they all settled down around the fire to eat bacon and bread, drink the strong coffee, and talk.
You asked about your ma, Ian. I'll just flat out shoot straight with you. She doesn't like that price on your head.
You've had one on your head nearabouts all your life, Pa.
Silver Wolf smiled and leaned back against his saddle, for the moment at least, staying out of this.
You're just gonna sit over there and grin like the cat who ate the cream, ain't you, Grandpa?
You just might take me a snooze. Man my age needs his rest. And I figure I'm gonna need all my strength when Wesley Parsons and his bunch get here.
Say it all, Grandpa. Is that bunch of bounty hunters close?
About 5 miles out and closing.
Well, thanks for telling us right off.
Them old boys is coming on slow, son. I figure they'll be here about 3 o'clock. We got plenty of time to set us up an ambush.
How many?
12 or 15, I reckon. It'll be an easy shoot. We'll put the animals in the center of them rocks where there's some graze and a tiny spring. But I reckon we'd best be getting set.
Didn't this Wesley Parsons swear to you one time that he'd never come back west, Pa?
Sort of, but I didn't believe him. He won't have to worry about it after today. I expect we'll bury him right here.
There'll be more after we do in this bunch. I learned over to the trading post that Blake Evans' father is a mighty rich man back east. Got more money than he knows what to do with. Powerful government connections, too. Blake was no count from birth. In some sort of trouble all his life, but his daddy always butt him out of it. Finally, he raped and killed a young woman and had to hit the outlaw trail. Young Ian's future is going to be like your life down in the Big Thicket country, Jamie. It ain't going to be easy.
Whereabouts back east?
New York City.
I just might pay Mr. Evans a visit if he wants to keep this up.
Oh, that would be a right interesting trip. Indeed it would.
I fight my own battles, Pa.
You hush up and take help from family when it's offered. If this was something you had started, I could understand his father's position. But it weren't none of your doing to begin with. Blake done a terrible thing and he paid the price for it. As far as I'm concerned, it's tit for tat. If Mr. Evans wants to drag this thing out, then he can face me. That's my say on the matter and it stands.
The men cleaned up the campsite and moved the horses, then settled in up high among the rocks. They each had 2 rifles, and the plan was that each man would take out 2 bounty hunters during the first few seconds of the fight, and then get the hell out of the rocks before ricochets started screaming all around them, and then they would head for the creek that ran alongside the upthrusting of stones. They all felt that with half of the bounty hunters down in the first volley, a lot of the fight would go out of those remaining. Jamie smiled as the men rode right up to the clean campsite.
This here looks like a dandy place to make camp. Water, some graze. Ugh, my back hurts from the day's ride.
Yeah, that trapper we tortured yesterday said that bastard's daddy was heading up this way. If we can kill and behead father and son, that'll be twice the money for us.
I want Jamie McAllister alive. I owe that bastard.
I want to burn him and see how brave he is.
The men in the rocks fired as one, and three bounty hunters went down dead. Three more balls ripped into the knotted up men, and four of them hit the rocky ground as the ball fired by Ian went right through the neck of one and slammed into the skull of the fourth man. The remaining bounty hunters went into a panic, and the men in the rocks jerked out pistols and let them bang. The distance was really too great for any type of accuracy, but the lead flew true, and two more manhunters were knocked from the saddle.
Let's get the hell out of here!
Look at them go! They ain't even thinking about stopping. They've had enough for this trip.
The grandfather, father, and son made their way down to level ground and began rolling over the bodies to check for signs of life. Two of the manhunters were alive. One wouldn't last long. The other wasn't that badly hurt, with only a neat hole punched through one shoulder.
Murdering bastards!
Oh, you really ain't in no good position to be calling folks names, laddie. As a matter of fact, was I you? If I wasn't going to say kindly things, I do believe I'd shut my mouth.
Ian was busy retrieving weapons and stacking them. He made a second pile of shot and powder and caps.
Go on, kill me, get it over with. I know you're gonna murder me. Go on and do it.
Jamie knelt down beside the man, his big bowie in his hand, and the man paled and tensed. Jamie cut open the man's shirt and looked at the wound.
You'll live. I'll fix up a poultice and you can be on your way.
Huh?
I didn't see Wesley Parsons in this bunch. Where is he?
That's for me to know and you to find out.
You're a fool. Tend to your own damn wound.
Jamie stood up.
Is you just gonna leave me here alone and hurt to be butchered by them red savages?
Grandfather, father, and son made no reply to that. The wolf had rounded up the horses and roped them together. Ian stashed the weapons in saddlebags and boots, and Jamie got their own mounts from the rocks. The bounty hunters had left two pack horses behind, filled with supplies and equipment. Jamie tossed the wounded man a rifle and pistol, shot and powder and caps. He pointed to a lone horse.
You have beans and bacon and coffee in those saddlebags. You ride out of here and don't ever come looking for any of us again.
The three rode out, leading the saddled horses and the pack animals.
Wait! Ain't you gonna bury the dead? That ain't no Christian way to act! Wait! I'm afeard to stay here alone!
None of the three looked back. The bounty hunters stopped several miles from the ambush scene before they killed their rapidly faltering animals.
Damn Wesley Parsons' eyes! He said this hunt would be easy.
Then that makes you a fool for believing them. If Parsons wants the McAllisters, he can damn well go after them his own self. I hate this damn western wilderness. Me and this hunt is done.
Where you be heading, Leo?
Back east. I'm done with this country. It's boiling hot during the day and freezing cold at night. I don't see why no man in his right mind would choose to live out here. It ain't for me. Who's going with me?
The answer to that question was simple. Everybody. Jamie had given his grandfather and son the supplies taken from the bounty hunters and bid them both farewell. He had seen within the first few moments of talking with his son that Ian was not going to quit the hunt until all involved in his wife's killing were dead. Jamie headed back to the valley, for there was much to do before winter closed in the settlement. He carried in his pocket a letter from Ian to his mother. It would be some comfort to her, providing she could read Ian's hurriedly penciled scrawl. On the fourth day from the rocks, riding easy and trailing what was left of the manhunters, Jamie saw the smoke from the bounty hunters' camp. They hadn't chosen well, for none of them were experienced western men. Jamie, being the man he was, rode right up to the camp and walked horse in. The bounty hunters looked up at him with a mixture of disbelief and open fear. Jamie sat his saddle, his rifle across the saddle bows, muzzle pointed directly at a big hulk of a man.
Howdy, boys. I saw you smoke. Figured you might have a cup of coffee for a man.
The huge man scowled.
You got a lot of nerve, McAllister.
I suppose I'll have to take that as a refusal to share your camp with me.
No, sit down and have some food and coffee, McAllister. Don't pay no attention to Tiny. He don't like nobody. We give up the hunt. I had me a bad feeling about it all along.
I ain't give up crap.
You get off that horse and I'll pick up the hunt as soon as your boots hit the ground.
You'll do it alone, Tiny. You're welcome to sit and drink and eat, Jamie McAllister. But if you want your hoss taken care of, you'll have to do that yourself. I ain't touching that mean-eyed stallion.
Jamie swung down. He tied horse to the picket line and turned around. Tiny was standing about 5 feet from him, hate shining through his piggy eyes.
I warned you, McAllister. Now you're dead meat and all mine.
Jamie stepped forward and hit the man on the jaw with the butt of his rifle. Tiny's jaw cracked, his eyes rolled back in his head, and he went down.
Nobody never could tell Tiny nothing. He always figured he knew it all.
You made yourself a bad enemy, Jamie McAllister. Tiny will carry the hate in his heart for as long as he lives.
Jamie poured himself a cup of coffee and took the offered pan of beans and bacon and bread and sat down.
I got lots of people who hate me for one reason or another. That just seems to be a cross I have to bear for the rest of my days.
I'd say you was bearing up mighty well under it.
The trip south was uneventful, and Jamie was grateful to once more return to the valley. There were no new additions to either cemetery, but there was a new building going up, and parked beside the building, a half dozen big wagons.
It's a store, Jamie. We have a real store here now. Let me introduce you to the owner. Abe, come here. Meet Jamie, Ian McAllister. Bring Rebecca and the kids.
Jamie was introduced to Abe and Rebecca Goldman and their three children, Rachel, Walter, and Tobias. Rebecca was very gracious, and the kids well-behaved.
We'll soon have everything anybody might ask for, from buttons to bacon. And there'll be a wagon train in next spring with people to settle in the next valley over.
In the next valley over, Jamie. Not here.
The days are gone when I have much to say about who settles where, Sam. It'll be good to have a store close by. Good to meet you folks.
And that was all he had to say about the new store. That night, Jamie and Katie snuggled close together in their bed.
Oh, Ian's never coming back, is he, Jamie?
I don't know, Kate. If he does, it won't be any time soon. This valley has bad memories for him. Losing Linda was a terrible blow.
Is our son gonna turn out to be a gunman? Is he, Jamie?
A gunman, Kate?
That's what some reporters and columnists are beginning to call Western desperados. I read it in the latest paper several times.
Interesting phrase. I don't know, Kate. I hope not. But I'm really not sure what it means. I do know that Ian is no desperado.
Did he take scalps back at the ambush site?
He did.
Kate turned on the feather tick, putting her back to Jamie.
He'll come back someday, Kate. When the hate in his heart is gone, then he'll return.
I wonder. I just wonder about that.
Those in the valley heard no word of Jamie Ian and Silver Wolf all that hard and long winter. When spring finally arrived after several false starts, the wagons had already begun to roll out of Missouri and onto the Great Plains, and the Indians were getting angry about the influx of whites in the country they had long claimed as their own. It was to be the beginning of a terrible and bloody time in the West, a time of sporadic wars that would last well into the 1880s. In June of that year, Jamie received word that his oldest son had cornered John Wilmot's younger brother in California and killed the man with a knife. Kate stood in the kitchen of their cabin and received the news with a coolness in her eyes that belied her true inner feelings.
Was John Wilmot's younger brother a member of the party that raided this settlement?
Why, I don't think so, Kate, but we don't know the whole story about the killing. Wilmot may have braced him and called him out. Now let's not judge until we learn all the facts.
Kate stepped outside and stood on the porch for a time.
Jamie, I think I see Grandpa riding over the ridge yonder.
Well, speak of the devil.
The old man was still spry, but his color was bad and his face twisted in pain. Jamie really didn't know how old he was, in his late 70s at least, probably older than that. He walked up to the porch, kissed Kate, and shook Jamie's hand. Kate showed him to a porch chair and went inside to fix him something to eat. The wolf didn't have much of an appetite. He ate a small bowl of beef stew, a few pieces of fresh-baked and buttered bread, and a pot of coffee before he spoke.
Ian almost killed them all. right down to the last man jack of them. 16 men. But he never got John Wilmot, Biggers, or Winslow. And the lad ain't gonna quit until he does. Them's his sworn words. I brung you a letter from your boy, Kate. I watched him write the words, and sometimes a crying he was whilst he done it. He loves both of you. But he's got a devil riding his back. And the only way he's gonna get loose from it is by killing them who killed his bride. I seen it in him, and said it, and he agreed. He's a man growed now, and you don't need my help no more. He's staying away from here, so's the kin of them he killed won't attack the settlement. And there's too many goddamn bounty hunters looking for him. See that bluff about midway up that mountain yonder? Jamie, you told me that's where you wanted to be buried when your time come. Well, my time ain't far off. And that's where I want you to plant me. I got me a cancer growing in my belly. Feel it nearabouts all the time. I might have a year, 6 months, or 2 days. I don't know. But I know I'm going. I left my white buckskins here after the brigand struck, and I want to be buried in them. You plant me with my rifle, my pistols, and my good knife. When I'm gone, you put my horse out to pasture and see that he never wants for nothing. I'm going up yonder and dig the hole myself, just the way I want it. You won't see much of me. I'll chisel out the stone and put the words I want on it. Jamie, you come check on me from time to time, because I'm growing weaker daily. That pisses me off, too. Here's that letter from Ian, Kate. Thank you most kindly for a fine grub, Kate. It hit the spot. I'll be going up yonder, where the winds blow and the pumas prowl and snort. I'll see you in a few days, Jamie.
I'll be along, Grandpa.
The old man stepped off the porch, tall and straight and proud. Kate and Jamie watched him head for the barn to get his horse.
A dying breed. When he's gone, it'll be the last of a breed.
No, it won't. You'll just step in to fill his moccasins.
A week later, Jamie rode up to the far-off bluff he had chosen for his own final resting place and checked on his grandpa. The old man had lost weight and looked bad, but he was still moving around well and working on his headstone.
Sit down by the fire, boy. It's cold up here. Pour us some coffee first.
The old man laid out a piece of deer skin, on which was a beautifully drawn map.
Done this myself, boy, over the years. See all these little X's? That's where there's veins of gold. Some veins might not yield no more than 10 pounds of gold. Others will give up maybe 500 or 1,000 pounds of it. There's enough there to see that your family and offspring for 100 or more years will never want for naught.
The old wolf laid back against his saddle and pulled a blanket over him.
Tired, boy. I am almighty tired. You know how old I am, Jamie?
No, sir.
I think I was born in 1757. What year is this, son?
1844, I think, Grandpa.
How old would that make me?
You're about 87 years old, Grandpa.
Damn!
What's the matter?
My daddy lived past 90, and his pa lived to be over 100. I thought sure I'd hit 90 at least. Well, I come close, didn't I?
You sure did, Grandpa.
Maybe it was 1747. Oh, hell. It don't make no difference. When your strings run out, it's gone. You take that map, boy. And after I'm gone, you can tell your woman that you'll be gone until the snow flies. You dig out that yeller metal and cache it where nobody but you knows where it is. Take a goodly mess of it back to home with you, and you cache it up here. I found a spot over yonder.
Silver Wolf waved a hand that suddenly looked awfully frail. Jamie's eyes followed the movement and saw where the wolf had marked a spot in the rock wall of the bluff.
I see it, Grandpa.
I lived me a full life, Jamie Ian McAllister. So I don't want no weeping and wailing and blubbering and a bunch of nonsensical carrying on over my bones. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Fine. Now, go on back to your woman and love her. come back in a few days. Go on, boy. I've made my peace.
Jamie sat for a few minutes beside his grandpa. He could see that the old man was asleep. On the third morning after leaving his grandfather in the high-up, Jamie stepped out onto the porch of his cabin just as dawn was splitting the skies. He looked up to the mountain, and he saw no smoke. When Jamie reached the bluff, he found his grandpa all dressed in his white buckskins, laying by the deep hole he'd dug. Jamie wrapped the body in the buffalo robe his grandpa had laid out. As gently as possible, for the old wolf was no small man, he placed the body in the ground. Jamie turned at the sound of hooves. Kate hopped down and walked to her husband's side, taking his big, hard hand in her small hand. She looked into the dark hole.
He dug until he hit bedrock.
Yeah. We'll mount it good with rocking.
Jamie's eyes touched on the rock where his grandpa had carved out his final eulogy.
Jamie Ian McAllister. Born 1757, Scotland. Died 1844, American Wilderness. I never backed up from no son of a bitch in my life. He must have wore out a dozen chisels doing that.
I'll go get Swede and the others.
I'll get busy filling the grave.
The service was a short one, just as Silver Wolf had requested. A few of the women cried, but demurely, and the wolf would have liked that. Reverend Haywood read from the Bible, and that was that. Jamie told Ellen Kathleen to take the rest of the kids home, and when he and Kate were once more alone at the gravesite, Jamie showed her the map his grandpa had given him.
No one else must ever know this, Kate. I thought long and hard about it, whether to tell you, for fear that if outlaws ever learned of the map, they would torture you to tell them. I'll be gone the rest of the summer, and when I return, none of our kids or grandkids will ever have to want for anything. And it means that Andrew and Rosanna can travel abroad to continue their studies, and you and I can enjoy a few extras in our life.
And also help others less fortunate than we are.
Right. I was just about to say that.
The first X on the map was less than 25 miles from the valley, but it was not a big vein. It played out after only a day's digging and gouging. But Jamie figured he had about 40 pounds of gold after everything was knocked off and cleaned up. He cashed it safely and rode on to the next X, about a half a day's ride away. After crawling through about 15 yards of thick brush and chipping away at the stone, Jamie sat back. It wasn't a mother load, but Jamie figured it was going to take him a good week or better to dig it all out. It took him longer than that to dig out and clean up the gold. He found a spot, and marking the exact location in his head, he carefully buried the gold and moved on to the next X. This one was a tiny creek that played out after only a few hundred yards run, and it was loaded with nuggets. Grandpa McAllister always had a small sack full of nuggets, and now Jamie knew where he got them. What Jamie didn't know, and was not likely to ever know, was how his grandpa managed to get rid of the gold without arousing suspicion. For government experts had already assured two presidents that there was no gold west of the Mississippi River. The old Silver Wolf told Jamie that a government expert was a man who couldn't get a job nowheres else. Jamie cleaned out the creek and moved on. He hadn't covered even half of the X's on the map before he knew it was time to head back to the valley. For humanity's sake, he could not load another pound on any of the pack animals he had brought with him. He didn't know what gold was going for then, but he figured he had thousands of dollars worth of it in the packs lashed onto the frames. Jamie returned to the valley and spent the night on the ledge where his grandpa was buried, hiding most of the gold before anyone knew he was back. Only Kate and a lawyer he trusted back in St. Louis would know about the gold, and only Kate would know where it was hidden. The next day, before the sun was up, Jamie rode down into the valley and put the weary pack animals out to pasture for a long and well-deserved rest. Jamie was sitting on the front porch when Kate arose and threw open the shutters to air out the cabin.
Well, I figure this is what you did while I was out working my hands to the bone. Just lay abed and lollygag about all morning.
Kate hadn't seen her husband in weeks, but still she didn't bat an eye.
Go fetch some wood if you want breakfast. And wash your hands. They're filthy.
After almost 20 years of marriage, he was still hard-pressed to get one over on Kate. Folks from the valley to the east of the settlement began coming over to trade at Abe's store. Warily at first, for they had heard all the many tales about Jamie Ian McAllister, adventurer, pathfinder, hero of the Alamo, and so much more. The men walked light around them. The kids were big-eyed staring at the huge man, and a few of the women batted their eyes and openly flirted with him, until Kate stepped in and with one glance put an end to all that. Jamie stayed back and surveyed the new settlers. He felt that most of them would do and had the wherewithal to make it out here in the wilderness. But a couple of the men would not last. They were trashy and shifty-eyed, and their women were loose. They would cause some trouble before it was all over.